Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Endgame Riley.
Oh, you know, that's my name.
And Spencer Thanos Snap Williams.
Of course. Of course you pick something ridiculous. You couldn't even pick a character, you picked a snap.
It's true. We are, I don't know if you can tell, but we are excited about what is to come this week with the Endgame film debuting this Friday. And so we thought we'd take some time to go back to the beginning of this entire, 10-year-long saga, and go back to the beginning and take a look at one of the films that kind of kicked off this whole franchise, and that is Iron Man. So stick around as we talk about that, and we'll give you a little bit of our thoughts on what we're expecting out of Endgame as well. So before we do that, Chad, give him that opening credits.
Well, I'll admit you stole a little bit of my thunder, but I'll go ahead and, go with the Thor reference. Before we enter the Endgame, the Filmlosophers podcast has our sights set on the film that started it all. And there is so much more Marvel-y goodness coming down the pike. Don't miss a moment. Stream new episodes each Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and or Audio Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, and we can't forget to mention that we're presented by the accomplished Universal Architects at Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios.
That is also true.
If you're already standing in line counting down the hours until your first screening of Endgame begins, we want to see some photos. Send us what your view looks like on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. And once you're done blasting a little AC/DC for the millionth time, we should remind you that we have a ton of great content on our website. Visit filmlosophers.com to pick your favorites.
AC/DC, is that because of
Iron Man? Iron Man.
That's Black Sabbath.
Hello. No, AC/DC is the kickoff song.
That's Black Sabbath.
Is Iron Man
Black Sabbath?
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's all good though.
Spencer, look up the soundtrack.
That's what song we're using. Speaking of Black Sabbath and kicking things off, we are going to get into our conversation of Iron Man. As we were talking about it earlier, we did mention Avengers Endgame is coming down the pipeline.
Spencer knows.
Yeah, the initial song is Back in Black.
On the soundtrack.
It's AC/DC.
Yeah.
For
it's the
Iron
kickoff
Man?
Song,
for Iron
not
Man.
The credit. This is the credit song.
Oh,
yes.
You're talking about the beginning of the movie.
Duh.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What else is a kickoff? It's the beginning.
You know what? You're snapped.
I am snapped.
Snapped.
See? And then you wonder why.
The facial expression that went with that motion just now made my evening.
Well, as we said, with all this craziness ensuing and all the expectations waiting for this Friday to arrive, we decided to take some time, as we said, to look at the beginning of this entire journey for ourselves and really give ourselves some opportunities to look back on 2008's Iron Man, the film that kicked off this entire franchise, if you will, or this entire saga, as the powers that be are calling it over
at Marvel.
Infinity Saga. We're going to take a little look at the Iron Man film and not just talk about it and review it, but kind of go in depth in terms of like its implications for the overall universe and what it actually started. So before we do that, Chad, give him that official synopsis goodness.
Iron Man tells the story of Tony Stark. Remember that name, Tony Stark, a billionaire industrialist and genius inventor who is kidnapped and forced to build a devastating weapon. Instead, using his intelligence and ingenuity, Tony builds a high-tech suit of armor and escapes captivity. When he uncovers a nefarious plot with global implications, he dons his powerful armor and vows to protect the world as Iron Man.
Yep. Directed by Jon Favreau, the film stars Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Terrence Howard as Lieutenant Colonel James Rhodey Rhodes, Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts, and Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane or Ironmonger. This is actually the first self-financed movie out of Marvel Studios, so this is, like we said, the one that kicked it off for what was to come and what we now know as the Infinity Saga. This was also the first in a planned six-picture deal between Marvel and Paramount before the acquisition of Marvel by Disney, which transferred the distribution rights of The Avengers and Iron Man 3 to Disney, while Paramount kept the rights to Iron Man 2, Thor, the 2011 one, and Captain America, the First Avengers, 2011, until Disney acquired them. So, unbeknownst to a lot of people, and I think this is one of those things that kind of slips under the radar for a lot of Marvel fans, a lot of people tend to forget that the first few films weren't put out by Disney. They were actually put out by Paramount.
They weren't even put out by Marvel.
No.
They were put out by other studios.
Yeah, that's right.
Altogether.
Because we've talked about this before on other shows, how it was actually different studios who produce certain ones, like the Incredible Hulk one was through someone else. And
Sony, I believe.
It might have been Sony.
Yeah.
And so a bunch of those that
Spider-Man helped. Was for sure Sony. Mm-hmm. X-Men, obviously, has been Fox the entire time up to this point.
So, obviously, like we said, this film, it's the one that kind of kicked everything off. At the beginning, when it first started, the budget of the film was around $140 million. Its opening weekend did $98.6 million domestically, making it number one for that weekend. And as of today, that we know of in terms of in box office numbers, the worldwide total's in the vicinity of $585 million.
Not too shabby for an unproven... I mean, nobody knew who Iron Man was. You generally in pop culture, a lot of people had some familiarity with Spider-Man, some familiarity with the Hulk.
Yeah.
Because they've been kind of standard bearers at different times for Marvel Comics. And so if you were at all familiar with the comics, you knew those characters. Also, obviously, different TV shows and properties through the years. Iron Man was never really one of the premier, like, forerunner. He's always been one of the... He's been a founding member of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And a prominent character in the comics, but he was never really, like, the one that started it all or the first one that comes to mind when you think of Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
Characters or properties or stories. And here they are. They went with Iron Man first, and... I remember at the time I was like, why? Why would you go with Iron Man? He's a drunk womanizer who happens to be really smart.
Yeah, and that also goes in the same aspect with, you know, on the cinematic side as well, implementing or utilizing somebody like Robert Downey Jr., which, I mean, it's kind of poetic how if you're familiar with Robert Downey Jr.'s past and totally. The things that he struggled with prior to taking on this role, his... life and the journey that he had been on had been similar to that of Tony Stark, drinking, drugs, billionaire, playboy, all those things, up until he came to some kind of awakening, if you will. And that's also another perspective.
That dovetailed really nicely with this character.
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm. It seemed, not to jump into anything anymore in terms of the review, but it seemed to suit him much more naturally. And I don't know if that was something of him like pulling straight out of his own life experiences or just him being really great at the role. But either way, it was a great just performance overall for him. And for him coming out of not really doing much else prior to, like, I jumped onto his IMDb. And prior to that, like, a lot of films other than like Zodiac, which was one film he did. A Scanner Darkly, which not many people had seen.
Super cool stylistically.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
Really interesting to watch.
But aside from that, like the Charlie Bartlett movie, the year before Iron Man, nothing really else prior to that. And that was a lot of the time where he was still struggling personally with his own demons and whatnot. Apparently, there's a story that goes around that it was iconic to have Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark in the film eating a hamburger when he got back from whatever happened overseas because of the fact that it was an actual Burger King hamburger that made him consider or contemplate turning his life around. Because apparently he had all these drugs in his car at the time and he got a Burger King hamburger and he looked at it and it just looked gross. And he looked, and then he turned around and saw his whole life and his car and the drugs and everything, and just realized he needed to change.
So, wow.
You know, that's a testament to Burger King, I guess.
Deep thoughts.
Although, no, is it really? That sounds kind of terrible. It's like, your hamburger was so gross, it made me reconsider my entire life choices.
If your life choices were drugs, I would hope for a hamburger like that to come across my head. I would hope so. But like we said, we're talking about this film, and let's just state the obvious here. We are excited like a bunch of school kids for this Friday to come. We cannot wait until Thursday night, Friday afternoon, and all the other screenings that we have planned during the course of the weekend to finally witness and take part in what has come to be a 10-year-long journey for all of us fans in Avengers Endgame. This film starting to do its press rounds, and it had its LA premiere
earlier this week.
Yeah, it's starting to get teased. I can't even jump online anymore because I'm like, oh, this person got to see a screening, or that person got to see screenings. This person's go over here to. It's like I'm in line at the cafeteria, and it's, you know, French bread pizza day, and I want to make sure I get to the front to get a pepperoni one because I know they're going to go out, but everyone else is walking away with their French bread pepperoni pizza. I need to get my French bread pepperoni pizza here.
Oddly, I understand what you're talking about.
It's just, I'm afraid to jump on the internet, and yet we're here doing a podcast that is broadcasted through the internet. So needless to say, we are excited. There's a lot that's going to be happening this week in terms of reviews, people who are going to try to spoil, people who are going to try to do all that kind of stuff. And we thought one of the things that would be really cool to do from this podcast is to not focus on just what is going to happen by the end of this week with the film, but
yeah,
also,
'cause we can't not talk about it.
Of course, that's it's in the notes at the very bottom. We've already talked to, we already mentioned we're going to talk about it, but to kind of talk about the journey that has led us to this point. Because in all honesty, it is a journey for especially us. We've all been fans since the beginning, since 2008's Iron Man. And it has been one of those things where it's like this kind of marks that milestone for a lot of us who have been following these films for so long in hopes to see this beautiful story come to fruition and this incredible resolution. So it's almost like it's emotional, like it's on that kind of level for a lot of fans.
It's a total, like, cultural phenomenon, cultural experience. I mean, I know person after person after person after person who had no idea who any of these characters were or any of these stories or anything until, like, I don't know, halfway through the last 11 years.
Yeah.
And so they've, you know, been catching up on parts of the story and everything, and they have favorites and other characters that aren't so favorited and whatever. And I mean, it's just remarkable the like, I don't know, the weight of the storytelling that has gone in from various different angles. I mean, I was just watching, you know, the day after the LA premiere of Endgame, they had Kevin Feige and the Six Avengers do their Hollywood star handprints, right? And Leonard Maltin, long, long, long time movie reviewer, movie critic, did a pretty lengthy intro, and he pointed out how this entire Infinity Saga, which started probably even unbeknownst to them to a certain degree with Iron Man in 2008, the entire thing has been not just an exercise in storytelling, but in risk taking, because they've hired like directors and support staff that maybe were not super obvious choices in order to tell different parts of the story in different ways and always keep the experience fresh while adding to the collective whole, like the overall momentum of the story, but then each of the individual pieces are their own unique elements. And to see how they've pulled it off, to have looked, you know, at summaries of some of the tweets from people who went to the LA premiere and like hear how Endgame, for many people who've seen it, is not just resolving Infinity War from last year. It's actually a culmination of the entire, you know, 11-year, 22-film arc that started here with Iron Man.
Yeah. And that says something. I mean, we've yes, it is very obvious. It's very blatant that this podcast, the members on this podcast, happen to be Marvel fans.
Nonsense.
I mean, it would be one thing.
How could you say that?
Well, it would be one thing to say we've done maybe an episode or two, but I think out of our entire run, we've done probably in total, I want to say close to 17.
Yeah, this one is 17. This is the 17th lesson exclusively devoted to an MCU property.
And seeing as we've already made like 100, so this would be 159 episodes. This is the 159th episode, not including special features or whatnot. But that makes up about 10% of all our content. So
yeah, I mean, we are, by the time we review Endgame, which you all in listener land, our dear devoted, what did we used to call them? Our fan base had a name before.
Film Loss of Fans. I think it was Film Loss of Fans.
Way back in year one, we dumped that quick. But
Spencer, don't give us.
Sorry, I must have missed those.
Yeah, it was before your time.
Hmm.
But those of you who are, you know, loyal listeners, and we hope that we're gaining a few more, we'll do our review of Endgame next week in the episode. That'll be episode or lesson 160. It'll be our 18th lesson devoted to the MCU, which is something like above 11% of our entire content library.
Spencer's looking at us like, you guys spent way too much time on Marvel. I can see it in Spencer's eyes already.
Well, no, there's like a good reason. They do produce some really amazing stories most of the time.
Oh, did you
know that? How many billions of dollars, you know, have they raked in the box office alone, let alone merchandising and theme parks and all of it?
Yeah.
It's a big number.
We've gone everywhere from like some of our earlier lessons, like lesson 8 and 9, and even 10 with the Captain America trilogy. We've done with like lesson 61 and 62 on the Guardians of the Galaxy films 1 and 2. You know, even lesson 85 and 86 being on all 3 Thor films. We've spent a good amount of time, and that's not even just kind of talking about like the bigger films, like the Infinity War review that we did, the Infinity War spoiler review, the Endgame conversations, even the points of conversations where we didn't necessarily put it in the information that we were talking about Marvel, but still talked about Marvel, which we do from time to time. There's just a level of appreciation for what this franchise, what this company, what the studio is doing with content that in any other hands in any other studio, and actually has been proven in any other hands in any other studio.
Absolutely.
That they can do it and they can do it well. Whereas, you know, you got a ton of other comic book films that had come out before that. Like you look at the Fantastic Four films in 2004 and 2007.
Oy.
We're not even going to talk about Fan-4-Stick. then you got like the Blade films. In terms of comic book movies, you got all the Batman movies, the Superman movies, the Punishers, Spawn, Howard the Duck. It goes on. I mean, there are so many different films and different projects that have been out there that have tried to utilize the Marvel brand to help them sell to a particular audience or a niche audience. And needless to say, I think it's pretty accurate to mention that none of them succeeded.
Not like this. We've never seen anything like this.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even, I was doing some research and I was telling Chad earlier, I was telling him, did you know that they made a 1978 movie for Doctor Strange?
I did not. And I looked at the trailer you put in the notes and it is shocking that Jessica Walters is in that movie.
She is.
I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, the things that people had attempted to do back then just under the guise of like, oh, this is a good property, let's throw it out there and so forth. I mean, yeah, I didn't put it in the notes, but there's a 1998 Nick Fury and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. film.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of just craziness out there. But it's interesting. If you look at all of that up until what they planned and what they executed with for 2008's Iron Man, there's a distinct difference from what Iron Man was able to do compared to what all the other films had done before that. And I guess just like jumping into it, it's interesting to take a look at the first thing you recognize about Iron Man is it's not just about creating a singular universe, but it's about creating the larger universe. Like, you realize that after the fact, but the idea of a film and taking the direction of a movie and saying, we're not just going to present people with a singular story of just this one character, like every film prior. You know, Fantastic Four was just about the Fantastic Four. You know, the Spider-Man movies were just about Spider-Man. Blade, thankfully, he was never a part of any other storyline in the movies. This film was made to be a part of something bigger than itself. And that says a lot about, like, the heart of the director, the mindset of the writers, the team that is putting support behind it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's safe to say that the idea was this was not going to get bigger than its britches, so to speak. It was going to be what it was. It
wasn't going to get bigger than its Jeff Bridges?
Than its Obadiah Stane.
Obadiah Stane.
And
it's pretty intimidating as a bald man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no joke.
I'm not going to lie.
I was like, I was surprised with how much, because obviously, we don't keep a lot of these movies at the very, very forefront of our brain, so we've all had to rewatch Iron Man this past weekend to kind of recap on it. And I never realized how intimidating Jeff Bridges could be as just this, like, unassuming villain, and then turning into this, like, this massive, power-hungry, like, creepo. I'm like, this guy, I'm worried now. Before I was like, oh, Jeff Bridges, the dude abides everything.
Right.
You watch this, and it's like,
dude abides.
Oh, crap. Jeff Bridges is going to crush my head with his fist or something.
I think, like, the best part of, like, his performance is just the ability of, like initially being, like, super disarming of, like, I'm taking this pizza with me, and then just immediately switch to, well, I tried to kill you, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to do it myself.
That's one of the interesting things. So that was one of the interesting things about this particular character. How many times he announced to Tony Stark that he is not a guy to be trusted? Like, yeah, well, I went to go talk to the board. Oh, you went to go talk to the board? Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Shows up at his own party. Oh, what are you doing here? Yeah, let's take pictures. I'm the one who filed the injunction for you, blah, blah, blah. Like, at that point, I would have been like, why have you not fired this guy? This guy is literally, like, just so bent on removing you from the equation entirely. Yeah.
I thought that was because he had shares in the company.
You can still fire people. If somebody kills somebody in a company, eventually they're going to be like, well, I know George killed Jeff, but we still have to do a vote. And if he stays, he stays. You know, I don't care if there's still blood on his chair. Jeff
Isn't
was another employee.
How corporate America works?
Oh, ooh. Wow. Commentary on the commentary.
Wow.
But, like, because obviously we could go into, like, vast detail or vast expansive conversation about just about Robert Downey as the character. But I think Obadiah Stane, Jeff Bridges' Obadiah Stane, is one of those rare opportunities where when people talk about, like, the great villains of the MCU, everybody gravitates to Loki. Like, oh, Loki, he's one of those great villains. He's the one of the more memorable ones. He's the one, you know, aside from Thanos, Loki is the one that had the most heart. He's blah, blah, blah. And I've always looked back on Iron Man because I've really liked Jeff Bridges, Obadiah Stane. I mean, I don't know whatever happened to his particular character, if there was ever any possibility for a future, because you don't ever hear about what happened to his body.
Well, it looks like he exploded. So
he was also in a giant iron suit.
And he fell from a really high place.
And he was in a giant iron suit.
Okay, but, like, you know, like, there's no internal stabilizers when everything's off, though.
Really? Let me check out the blueprints that you were looking at just so I can make sure I'm just seeing that. I don't know. You don't know that.
There's no power. What's going to save him?
Here's the
thing.
He's
in a metal casket.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Don't let Rhodey hear you say that.
Right?
So here's the thing, though. What's so good about that character is that he's a bad guy without the suit. Like, the suit enhances his threat level, sure. But he's a compelling, believable, bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, he could be boardroom bad guy, and they wrote that part of his character super well.
Yeah.
Like, oh, snap. Well, no. Sorry. But I didn't mean that.
It's a pun now forever in Marvel.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap. Where'd Spencer go?
Boo.
Spencer is the snap.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dude abides. But like, he's a compelling bad guy on his own before the suit. Like, obviously, you've got the whole bit, you know, in the first half where you're not, he hasn't shown all of his cards yet. You know he's going to end up being the bad guy, but he hasn't shown you that within the context of the story. And then he does, and he leans fully into it, and he does these terrible things, mostly in a quiet way. Like subterfuge, you know, threats and deception and whatever. Like, I'll cut you down from the inside and nobody else will be the wiser.
Yeah.
Really setting up the possibility that he could have been involved in whatever happened to Howard Stark. And what is it, Maria? The mom, you know, obviously later that whole thing is kind of assigned to the Winter Soldier later in the sequence of films. But in terms of like who called the hit on them.
Yeah.
Like the way that Obadiah Stane kind of struts and swaggers around quietly, like he could totally have been the one who put the hit on them. Like because he could absolutely be the one behind, like, and then I took over your company and I used you as the poster child to make me more money and get more military contracts. You're my little poster boy and you always have been. And that's like, that's a good bad guy.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say since the Mandarin turned out not to be the Mandarin, Obadiah Stane is the best Iron Man villain that we've seen.
Hands down. Mm. Like, please, let's never talk about Mickey Rourke, please. Just Mickey Rourke and his Russian accent and his bird. You don't remember that, Spence?
No, I do. I was just trying to think of which one was worse
between
Mickey Rourke and
They're both horrible.
And the fake,
they are both horrible.
The Kingsley.
The entire reveal for Ben Kingsley had me throwing a fit in the theater
because it was such a good tease.
It was
such a great, unique take on the Mandarin, which is one of the top bad guys, at least in Iron Man's corner of the comics.
Up until two-thirds into the movie.
And you're like, oh my gosh, they're gonna do this, and they're going to do a better Mandarin in the movie than in the comics, and then you get Trevor Slattery. Slattery.
I thought, like, for a second, like, when he had that, like, dude bro persona, I was like, this is a fake out, and I'm not going to buy this. And then they stuck with it, and I was like...
You know, it's interesting to say that, because I was really, really hoping and praying that, like, that was the case.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Sir Ben Kingsley. Like, the whole, some people call me a terrorist. Like, that whole thing was perfect.
Yeah, that was great.
It's like, that was incredible.
Terrifying.
It was. And it was, like, the ruthlessness of this guy, the way where... Oh, I'm just an actor. Like, oh, come on.
You've got to be kidding me.
Seriously.
Oh,
like,
my god.
There are people out there.
And back in this movie,
the
bad guys are members of a group called the Ten Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. Which is, for people who don't know, the organization that is ran by...
The Mandarin. His powers, if you will, he wears a ring on every finger, so he... does different. I understand why they didn't lean all the way into it, because it would conflict with the Infinity Stones and the Gauntlet and everything, because there's a bit of a, you know, for mainstream audiences, it's like, wait a minute, didn't we see that guy before?
Yeah.
And now you've got a big purple alien with fewer rings in a glove. I don't get it. But so each of the rings gives him a different power, and so with all 10 of them, he's got a lot of power.
Yeah.
Not to snap half of life out of existence, but to be a very formidable bad guy.
Yeah. And
alas, it was not meant to be.
Sadly.
Yet.
And yes, there will be a time and place to lament about Iron Man 2 and especially 3, but we're talking about part 1. And Obadiah Stane, Jeff Bridges' Obadiah Stane, I do agree. Like, his character, the way he portrayed Obadiah Stane, felt like, to me, on similar footing with Captain America, the Winter Soldier's Robert Redford, like in terms of playing that the office politic type person who has this underhanded theme or underhanded plan.
It and doesn't take superpowers to be a bad guy.
Exactly. It doesn't take somebody who has this unique special ability to overcome. It just takes psychological, you know, mind tricks, Jedi mind tricks. Don't say
anything. I didn't say anything.
And mind you, he's not the only person who really stands out in this film. We get our first introduction, obviously, of Pepper Potts as well, Gwyneth Paltrow's character.
I forgot how good they were together.
Yeah. Like how much, and it's sad because you don't see her as much in this last phase, or even because they broke up, you know, whatever it may have been. Or
then they got back together.
True. They did get back together in Infinity War. But needless to say, like Gwyneth Paltrow plays a great Pepper Potts. She plays a really great, mild-mannered, innocent, yet still strong-willed woman who, mind you, there was a scene where she's trying to hack into Tony's computer to get like files, and the general like genuine fear that she has when Obadiah Stane walks in, I was like, oh shoot, she's gonna get caught. Like, forgetting that it's a movie, like, oh shoot. Because she plays it so well. It just seems so natural for her. Like the sense of urgency, the fear of what is to happen if, you know, if he does do something stupid, or even the consideration and care that she has for Tony. I've forgotten how much I laughed in the scene when she's replacing his arc reactor with the new one that he built.
Oh, yeah.
And that whole scene is just hilarious, although still scary, because I'm like, wow, she's got her hand like elbow deep into his chest. but like I said, it well-written film, well-written dialogue, and the way just the film kind of unfolds as it from beginning to end, you're getting a great introduction to characters that would normally in anyone else's hands would have probably been overlooked or not recognized or not even given the time in the film. And honestly, recognizing like Jon Favreau's genius, I want to say. I mean, his ability to really do a great job with a superhero film says a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, he and his team made the right decision, which was to ground the fantastical elements in something relatable, authentic, and real.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, the film starts with an ambush in Afghanistan, right? In 2008.
Yeah.
So not very long after, you know, like September 11th, the war on terror and all of that, like it was still super, super fresh. And you get that sequence twice before you ever get the Mark I or the Mark II Iron Man suits.
Yeah. And it's so great going back to, because you were mentioned like at the beginning, and how the film just kind of chronicles that whole straight from the comics kind of experience for fans who, this is one of those instances where at the beginning of this saga, it's okay to show fans like this was really cool in the comics and we're going to show you in the film, like him creating his own arc reactor, him creating the suit to get out of there, him in that Mark One fully bulky looking thing that helps him get out of the cave. And seeing it translated onto the silver screen and not even having the mindset of like, ah, well, that was just like the comics. It was like, no, this is cool. Like, this is legitimately how Macaulay Culkin would go if he ever got caught by terrorists. Like, this is him. This is what would happen.
What?
Like,
okay, I don't think Macaulay Culkin is that bright.
I don't know. You give time to Tony Stark, Batman, and Macaulay Culkin. I'd like to see him battle it out. So, just saying.
That's a very odd pairing.
Give time to any of them.
I will say this. As a comic book reader through childhood,
yeah,
Iron Man, I've said it before on this episode, he was not one of my favorite characters. I think this movie was better than any Iron Man comic I've ever seen. Now, granted, I've not read a whole bunch of his solo titles.
Yeah.
But this is like, you take all the right elements, you put them in the right hands, both creative, behind the scenes, and performer, and suddenly you've done what was nearly impossible, which is made the character really, really good, compelling, watchable, likable, believable, and suddenly you want to see more.
Mm. Yeah.
It's easy, I think, in the comics for several of the main characters. Like, I was never particularly into Thor, Iron Man. I was always, you know, pretty chummy with Captain America. But,
of course.
You know, like, but like Doctor Strange, never really got into Doctor Strange, but I love him now because of the movies, you know? And I think that whole trend really started, for me at least, with Iron Man, because I was like, oh, they're going to take this jerk?
Yeah.
And he's going to be the starting point? Where's Captain America? That's who you need to start with.
Yeah.
And they started with Tony Stark, and it was brilliant.
Well, and it's one thing to say, like, even with this particular character, you're looking at somebody who has been recognized throughout comic book history as, I mean, let's just be honest, a drunkard, someone who's battled with his own demons more so than he's battled villains. You know, somebody who, if you're looking at probably one of the more, you know, fallible superheroes, Iron Man's up there in that top five, you know. And looking at what people do know about him, it was an interesting choice to go like, okay, well, out of everybody that we have, let's see, let's start with the guy who has an entire run solely based on his drinking ability or his drinking issues with Iron Man, Demon in a Bottle. Like, that's literally a storyline for one of his comics.
Hmm.
So I kind of understand in terms of that point of like really trying to get that idea, but recognizing that I guess there was some type of genius in that storyline. I mean, altogether, I don't know the reasons why they started in that route, but it, seeing as it's based in, like you said, a little bit of realism with his mechanical ingenuity and whatnot, it does make a little bit of sense. Spence, what about you? What do you think? What are your thoughts as far as like with some of the characters coming into this film? Anything that stood out to you? Mr. Thanos snap.
Whatever. I was actually really glad we did this this week because I kind of forgot how awesome this movie is overall. Just from like seeing like the beginnings of the entire like Marvel universe building up, remembering that Terrence Howard was Rhodey for a while.
Yeah. Maine.
That's I it was something I knew, but it's just like something I forgot when he showed up.
Poor Terrence Howard.
Yeah, he walked away, didn't he?
I believe that's what had happened. He walked away.
Yeah.
His fault.
Yeah. So it was just really great to see this movie again, and you know, everyone's very good portrayals of their character.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like even seeing how at the beginning of this whole saga, how Iron Man would put his suit on, or how he started to put his suit on, and then you look at like the last Iron Man film, or the last film that had Iron Man in it, which was Infinity War, and you're looking at somebody who's using like these huge machines to like bolt this down and screw this down and do this, and he's having trouble taking it off the first time, and now it's like in a nano container in his chest, and it just appears on his
body. Melts all over him.
Yeah, it's like, man, 10 years in terms of like progress can do a lot.
Totally.
Well, after, you know, Iron Man 3, he just started like rapidly developing like a whole bunch of suits, so it's not really surprising that he figured it out.
That's true.
Get out of one.
Yeah, it's very true.
The other thing that I would say with regard to the suits, I mean, I think that the film was super well positioned, well written, grounded. The performers were top notch. Also, Industrial Light and Magic. My gosh. I remember when this movie came out, and I'm like, I'm obsessed with the effects in this film. The putting on of the suit, the moving around of the suit, the showdown with the tank.
Yes.
Like
the long shot of the tank down the way.
Oh my gosh. The fighter jet, like tango in the air thing, all of it. I'm just like, Industrial Light and Magic totally killed it in the best way with this movie.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get that right, you've lost your entire cinematic universe.
Completely.
This is not the same as like a rubber Batman suit. It needs to work in a really unique, different way, and they totally figured it out.
Yeah, because it can't just be all tangible. It can't just be all like practical effect, but at the same time, you don't want it to look hokey. You don't want the CG to look ridiculous. Like, you want it to still have a cinematic feel. You want it to have a sense of realism. The suit can't look like it's straight out of like Gundam Wing or something. So you take anime reference as such.
Yeah.
And it looked great. Like you were saying, the putting on of the suit, every single bolt, every single turn, every single, you know, connecting point. That's what, for me, feels iconic when I think about like the Iron Man franchise, like that first time where he puts on the suit and it's just like you see every single thing that makes up him and him ultimately coming into his own in that like 15-20 second montage. And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it still holds up to today. Like, there are films today that still struggle, Captain State, that still struggle with, you know, getting CG right and getting the consistency down.
Captive State, forget that. Hellboy last week.
Oh my gosh. I
would believe that Hellboy was made 11 years ago and Iron Man was made yesterday.
From the same team that did
from the graphics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the nice thing about like Iron Man and the whole suit aspect is like when I look at that suit, I believe that like there's something there that has some weight.
Yeah.
Versus the effects of Hellboy, where I feel like there's nothing there. There's no one's looking at it.
Well, and like you get authentic battle damage,
yeah.
And like you got the gritty, grungy filter on the camera, and like the way they've recolored all the footage for it's visceral, it's real, it's really, really believable in almost every frame. It's incredible.
Yeah, and that's something you're going to attribute to like just the choice of the filmmaker and the studio behind it to choose and to go in that direction. Because you look at a lot of the films, like I said beforehand, and there are scenes like, I mean, I don't want to poke too much fun, but like in the first X-Men film, that scene where, you know, Wolverine is like, he catches on to one of the crowns on the Empire State Building and that
Statue
whole,
of Liberty.
Yeah, or the Statue of Liberty, you're right. And he's kind of spins around while holding on to that. And it kind of transitions into like a wonky, you know, ninth grade 3D model of somebody swinging on, you know.
That's still better than the graphics in Hellboy.
It's still better than the graphics.
the new one.
The new Hellboy. Long live Guillermo del Toro. But like I said, that goes back to the choices of the filmmaker and the director and Jon Favreau and his team and as well Marvel Studios. Like we said, this was Marvel Studios' first fully financed film. Self-financed film, so recognizing a lot of their input and their choices to move forward. Do any of you know when Kevin Feige always been ahead?
He was there. I don't know that he was fully in charge at this point, but he was absolutely instrumental behind the scenes. He's been there
since the beginning.
Yeah. I mean he's been there for all of them. I don't know at what point made like the figurehead, you know, man in charge.
Yeah.
The buck stops here.
but
it's a good thing they did that. And he totally deserves the star that he got.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Especially by Leonard Maltin. I mean, come on. And of course, within this film, you get the incredible introduction to what is now known as S.H.I.E.L.D. Strategic Homeland, something, something, something. It's changed throughout
it's
so many different
times.
Different
in the movies than it is in the comic books, and yeah.
Yes, and we understand all the people who fight over that particular bit of information, but we get a great introduction to Agent Coulson in this one, which he seems more of like an annoying office receptionist who's trying to get an appointment with somebody rather than the Agent Coulson that we have now come to know and love.
But then once again, he and Pepper Potts have a fantastic friendly rapport.
Yep. Yeah. As the films continue on, you see a lot of that grow and blossom and come into something special. So that is actually true. And then, of course, one of the first Marvel end credit scenes within this franchise, within this entire saga, we get the introduction to the Avenger Initiative, which is so awesome. Because it's great to see how this ends with that one, and then the last film before the last Avengers film ends with the Avenger Initiative as well with Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's kind of poetic in itself.
Totally. Well, and I mean, let's just state for the record, Samuel L. Jackson trumps David Hasselhoff every time.
Samuel L. Jackson trumps David Hasselhoff in life. Let's just get that straight right now. Like, yes, I love David Hasselhoff for his 80s rendition of some song from that Kung Fury movie.
True Survivor. Yeah.
But
that was amazing.
But Samuel L. Jackson all day, every day. There's no question about it.
Yeah, no.
And to see him bring to light somebody who is so, you know, important and just detrimental to the overall MCU as Nick Fury,
he's not detrimental. He's contributory.
It's contributory.
Like, detrimental means he pulls away from it. He's like the glue that holds all the beginning phase films together.
That's true, because it's the great opportunity where we see him introduce the Avenger Initiative to Tony. Then we have Tony talking about it with, you know, General Ross, and then you got it's like a huge domino effect. This was one of those instances where you didn't know going to the theater to see the film, you didn't know that there was something at the end.
Yeah.
You just knew other people would say, oh, by the way, stay till the end because there's apparently another scene. And that's what it was, just another scene. It became part of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe culture to have an end credit scene. Mm-hmm. And it's just, even if it was meant in a joking manner, like the end of Homecoming that has the Captain America one where he's like,
oh, yeah, patience.
Lesson in patience and blah, blah, blah. Like those who wait through the entire end credit scene just to see a last or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that was funny. I actually like that. But it started with this particular film to make you see that Marvel is not just invested, like I had stated at the beginning of this, in just the one singular film, but to let you know that this film is connected to a larger universe. And it kind of being confirmed with our one-eyed Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury saying, hi, I'm Nick Fury, director of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I want to introduce you to the Avenger Initiative. Like, for anybody who's read any of the comics or has had any inkling or even saw the David Hasselhoff weird freaking movie, like, this means something. And it's cool because you've heard about S.H.I.E.L.D. with Agent Coulson. You just don't know what it is. Anything that Samuel L. Jackson is tied to or a part of, I feel like I'd want to be in his gang. Like, if Samuel L. Jackson ever started a gang, I would be like, I want to be with Samuel L. Jackson.
You certainly don't want to be against it.
I don't want to be against it. Yeah. Like, he's Shaft now, so apparently I don't even... So, that's scary. But, I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, you recognize that's part of the allure of when people go and see these movies. Like, I want to know, what is the next bigger picture? And every time we see one of these films, we see something that either feeds back into us in terms of the experience we just had or feeds into an experience that we are going to have in a follow-up film. And that's just...
Well, and it's not the first time that a film has had a scene at the end, right?
No.
I mean, like, you know, Ferris Bueller, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But it usually when you have a scene at the end, it's like a wink or a small continuation of a part of the story or whatever. What made this one so distinctive is you knew already what they were going to try to do, which was make multiple franchises all interconnect with each other. They had already sort of stated that that was a hope and a goal. But then seeing this scene was your first step into that vision, like that world where it's not just a continuation of Tony Stark's story at that point. As soon as Nick Fury shows up before he even opens his mouth, you're like, wow. They are actually going, at least to try it. They're going to do it, but they're going to try it. And like they have no option. The Avengers Initiative is not Iron Man 2, right?
No.
So like they're going for it. They're going for the big kahuna. And to see now where they've gone is incredible.
Mm. Yeah. Which, by the way, in terms of talking about breaking the fourth wall and whatnot, we do get into that in Lesson 11, Ferris Bueller's fourth wall. So check that one out as well. And I think the biggest thing to kind of take away from this conversation as we wrap it up is the beauty in this film is not just in giving fans who already are fans of Marvel Comics something to pine over, but it helped create brand new fans in the entire brand new like sector of the cinematic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many times after that first film did you begin seeing kids wearing, you know, Iron Man helmets or Iron Man masks or people wanting to dress up as Iron Man for conventions or watching people do that for Halloween? even after the fact, with other films that began to come down the pipeline, with Thor and with Captain America, people were wanting to be a part of it because they were becoming brand new fans from this property, from this franchise, from this saga.
Yeah, they've never picked up a comic book in their life.
But because of these films and the exposure, I mean, it's these movies have played such a huge role in this community in itself, just this entire niche community, that it's also impacted even the way the characters are portrayed in the comics. Because we were just talking about how Tony Stark was a particular way for the longest.
Yep.
And then you have Robert Downey's portrayal of Tony Stark in 2008, in the 2008 film. And all of a sudden, they bring back Iron Man into the whole new run. And it's uncanny how the likeness of Tony Stark in that in the comics looks just like Robert Downey Jr.
And talks like him and acts like him, has the snarkiness going on.
Yeah. So it's that's one of the things that really is the biggest indicator, if you want to say, like, the litmus test of what a true comic book to big screen adaptation film can really do. And that is not just create opportunities for already established fans, which we've talked about at length already, but to say, not just to create opportunities for already established fans, but to create moments and experiences for fans, for brand new fans of this franchise, of this saga.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's kind of moot, but I'd still want to go around the table and see. I want to know, Spence, obviously this film passes for a lot of us, but let's go through in terms of how many monocles do you give this particular film compared to the rest of the MCU?
Against all the movies?
Sure. Or how does it do in terms of, like, out of five?
Well, you know, it's really just a fantastic intro into the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I remember when the first time I saw it, I was super confused with that end credit scene, and I was like, oh, this feels important, but I don't know what anyone is talking about now.
as like me at the end of Avengers, and I'm like, oh, look, Barney's the next bad guy.
I love you.
But yeah, you know what? I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 because, you know, it's a really important, like, first step, and it was a really well executed first step.
I think it's a great way to put it. I think in terms of my perspective for the film, I obviously enjoyed watching it. I enjoy everything that it stood, what it stands for, and what it still stands for. And I honestly probably would give it a 5 out of 5 as well, because everything that this film does sets the stage for what is to come, what has came, and what is to come for us this Friday. So this film is the reason why people like me, people like Spence, obviously people like Chad, are actually, like, really invested in this, because this was the first taste, if you will, the appetizer to what great meal we have in store coming
totally.
Up. So, Chad?
Yeah, I would also give it a 5. I liked it even more rewatching it. I mean, I've seen it a few times over the years, but I don't own it. So rewatching it again this week in preparation for this discussion, I was just amazed. I was like, they had so much calibrated and set up right.
Yeah.
About this entire project. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, there's no reason why it would have been so well done aside from, like, a solid vision and total commitment to seeing it through. I think standouts for me, again, Industrial Light and Magic, the effects on that suit are top-notch. Still, like, there are other Iron Man movies that have not impressed me as much as the first one with regard to the way that the CG for the suit is handled.
Yeah.
I would also say, in starting to look toward Avengers Endgame, one of the dialogue bits that stuck out to me in Iron Man, in rewatching it, was when Pepper is quitting.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're going to kill yourself. And his response is something along the lines of, I finally found my purpose. Like,
yeah.
I'm doing something that matters. I'm counteracting all the bad stuff that's been done behind my back in my name. And just like, that arc is still happening. That expression is still... That, like, bring your freaking Kleenex. Like, there's a way that that goes down. And like it's the way that he expresses it in Iron Man is basically like, my life has changed and I don't have a different path to go. Like,
are you thinking this is like foreboding?
And he doesn't say, Pepper, you're wrong. It's not going to kill me. He doesn't say that. He's already accepted that eventuality because he knows that he's fixated and he's not going to stop until he's forced to stop. And we've seen kind of the ebb and flow of that throughout his story arc over 11 years now, where he's forced to stop, or he has PTSD, or, you know, she's in danger, or, you know, they're trying to start a family and he shouldn't have gone on that spaceship with those weirdos chasing the wizard and all that. But he can't stop. He can only see it through. So, I mean, just the heart-wrenching poetry of that arc, I mean, that's mythological. It's legendary. It's so good.
That's true. Well, that about, like I said, wraps up that conversation. And mind you, yes, we are obviously anticipating everything that is coming down the pipeline for in Endgame. And I just want to real quick, before we wrap this up, kind of talk about Endgame a little bit. And as we're in the final countdown, it's the final countdown. I had to pull that little thing.
I know. Where's your bit?
A couple questions for you guys. Like, how have you guys been able, like, have you guys been able to ward off any of the spoilers? Because obviously some not very good person, because I don't want to use any other choice words, but I would love to. Some not very smart and nice person decided to leak some key footage from the actual film, and that person should be strung up by their toes and left hanging. But have you guys done a good job of like avoiding any of those spoilers, or have you just completely turned off all social media? Spencer just turned off his computer. I think that's his sign.
No, I normally don't even stay on social media because I don't like it for the most part. But like, my newsfeed articles have been occasionally be like, hey, there's this Avengers Endgame. And I'm like, I don't want to see anything about this. Don't bring it to me. Don't have it in my vicinity. Go away.
Really?
Yeah, no, I've been like I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. I'm 2 days away, and I've done a pretty good job.
Are you saying you're in the Endgame?
Yes, I'm basically in the Endgame.
But it's...
Yeah.
Sorry. What about you, Chad?
I mean, it gets more and more difficult. I am not interested in spoilers. I really appreciate all of the professional outlets that are communicating very clearly, like, to what degree there's any level of potential tangential spoiler-ish kind of discussion going on. Obviously, the premiere in LA earlier this week, there was a lot of opportunity to spoil some stuff, and the outlets that I looked at immediately after had already culled through anything that might be spoilery, and they only were sharing tweets and posts that were talking about people's like emotional vibe coming out of the theater, or, you know, did they overall like the experience or not like the experience or whatever. There was no like story plot point spoilers, not even to the level of, you know, confirming any of the footage that we've seen in the trailers. Like, this is in it, this is not. This is different when you do see it, or this happens later than 20 minutes in, so they lied to us, or whatever, you know, what, not even to that degree of conversation. It's been very high level, broad, like brush strokes, kind of just overall tone. And it's so far what I've seen been very positive, which is super exciting.
Yeah.
I'm already like one of the several of the things that I saw following, you know, the conclusion of the LA premiere, were critics and other, you know, influencers or whatever talking about how many times they cheered or they laughed or they cried, like actual physical tears. And I'm like, I'm doing all of those things already, and I haven't even gone to the theater yet. The little boy inside of me is like, I don't know. It's like a dozen Christmas mornings
packed
together, and the little like 8-year-old inside of me is like vibrating with excitement.
Yeah. And that's just like, that's the nature of being in this particular community or type of like fandom. It's like you recognize that you have been waiting for this day, much like Christmas morning, how you wait all month for Christmas morning to come, and then it comes and you're just all excited, all get out. You know, this is one of those instances where we've been waiting for so long to come to this particular point in the storyline to find out how does this chapter end for this saga, for this particular portion of the whole entire lifetime of the films. Like the ending of a great book in like a trilogy. This is really, really something that you can't really fully explain. It's like one of those things you have to just feel. You have to just be on board with it, you know? What are your guys' biggest anticipation for this film, or the biggest expectation? Like, are you hoping to see, you know, Thanos get his butt whooped? Are you hoping to see, you know, them do some kind of insane cameo? Are you one of those people who are hoping to see a Deadpool cameo? Like, I know there's a ton of people out there like, oh my gosh, let's bring Deadpool into this. Yeah.
Too soon.
Yeah.
He's going to get there, but too soon. What
about you, Spence? What's your biggest anticipation?
Well, after rewatching this movie and...
And if you say intermission, by the way, there's not going to be...
Yeah, I know. I'm already upset about it. After rewatching Iron Man, I'm really, like, looking forward to what, like, Tony Stark's last scene in that movie is going to be. Yeah. So that's, like, the thing I'm kind of, like, mentally preparing myself for, because I feel like I'm going to cry and it's going to be sad. But maybe I'm wrong. Who knows?
I mean, I don't know. Like, there was this image I saw today on Instagram, I believe, where it has a picture of Tony. It's a you know, cartoon type of thing, but it's a picture of Tony Stark holding Spider-Man and like crying, and it says in the caption on the bottom, "This better happen or I will riot." In Endgame, this better happen in Endgame or I will riot. What about you, Chad?
I have a very specific, like, I'm already
doesn't have to do with Ant-Man,
and
right?
crying inside, among others. But I am like screaming and crying with excitement because, sort of to your point or your that illustrator's point, like, if this doesn't happen, I don't know that I'd riot, but like, it has to happen. I want like a 30-person Avengers assemble.
Oh, that like, has to be in there. So
every single one of them who was snapped, every single one of them who went to resave the ones that were snapped, like a massive collection of heroes responding to that call, which has got to come from Captain America.
Yeah.
He almost said it at the end of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Almost. But now there's a payoff. Yeah. And like the swell of music, all of them that are like running, walking, flying, whatever the heck they're doing, like, oh, mercy. Like, the 8-year-old inside of me will explode and come out of the pores of my body as confetti.
please don't. Let's not have...
And you guys are going to be right beside me when it happens, so...
It's like Scanners all over again or something, a horror movie. I think for me, one of the biggest expectations I'm really hoping for with this movie is being able to see like that opportunity where they get like even footing with Thanos and they have a real, you know, drawn out brawl. Like, I want to see that whole thing happen. I want to see them go toe to toe. I want to see Captain America alongside the other powerhouses like Thor and whomever else, like, to really just pummel Thanos. And obviously not like to an OP state where it's like, oh, they just, you know, one punch from Captain America and Thanos is a puddle of purple goo. No, like, there's a battle. I want to see that kind of thing.
Well, and something has happened to Thanos. He was mortally wounded by Stormbreaker. The gauntlet is not fully functional anymore. He has like injuries that he may or may not have recovered from that he sustained at the end of Infinity War. So it's not an unbeatable Thanos necessarily anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And this one's kind of just in terms of, because we keep seeing things from But Dave Bautista, who just happens to stand out in certain roles because he's so unassuming. You don't think Dave Bautista would be a funny guy, but in this context, he is. Any anticipated standout characters in the movie? Like anyone you're really hoping to see kind of become something that you weren't really expecting? Like, for instance, for me, I'm really looking forward to see how they portray Ronan with Hawkeye's character, how that kind of thing goes about him, what he does, how he's doing it, how he responded to like to the snap. I don't even know if they're going to show what had happened or even talk about it, or if it's just going to be them going to him as he's like chopping people down in Chinatown, apparently. So,
well, they have to talk about it. It's a massive shift in his characterization.
Because he can't just change for no reason.
Maybe Sports Clips got his hair wrong and he just went after people. I mean, you don't know.
Well, they've I'd all be been decimated by now.
What about you, Spence?
No, I'm just like, I feel like there's going to be some really great character moments around, like, you know, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thanos. So I'm like really looking forward to just seeing those guys in all of their scenes.
Oddly enough, Spencer's wearing green, and it made me think about Hulk, seeing as we're going to be getting the Hulk, actually seeing him in the film, I think, because you keep seeing him in the trailer. So I'm hoping that's an actual thing and not another tease.
All their trailers are fake now. I don't trust them.
Spencer. But like, that's going to be cool to see, like actually seeing him back in action since Thor Ragnarok, because he didn't do anything in Infinity War. So I'm wondering how they're going to resolve that whole situation. Mm. What about you, Chad? Any anticipated characters or outstanding characters?
All of them. I'm trying to like whittle down. I don't know that. I mean, like, I have, like, okay, I'm sorry. Okoye for sure.
Yes!
She is a boss. We've got to know where the heck Valkyrie has been.
Yes.
Because we know she's in it, and she was not in Infinity War, and it was not really clear how she couldn't have been.
That was odd, yeah.
So they've got to figure out how to explain that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they've got a good explanation. I think that in terms of, I don't know, like, all of them, you can't trust anything.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't trust that the dead ones are dead. You can't trust that the alive ones are alive. You can't trust if they're going to time travel or not. You can't, like, until you see it, you don't know how they're going to resolve this story. And the other thing that I would say is, you know, with these early reactions, one of the things I really liked reading was multiple times people would say in their, you know, tweets about the premiere, this movie, Endgame, is not a conclusion to Infinity War. It is the culmination of the entire saga.
Yeah.
It's a lot bigger than just the next part after Infinity War, and that is inspiring. I don't know how they can pull off so much in one movie. Granted, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah, I was going to say, that probably had something to do with it.
By the way, fun stats for you.
What's that?
Presently, as of the recording of this episode, Fandango is reporting that 4,000 screenings have sold out already ahead of the launch. It's already made somewhere between $140 and $160 million in presale. It's expected to get somewhere in the $300 million or higher domestic take-home over the weekend.
That's insane.
And kudos to AMC Theaters for being brave enough to have some of your properties open for 72 hours straight.
Oh, that was just insane.
Oh, you're talking about for the full, like, 22?
Every movie.
No, they're just looping it. If you want to go see this movie at 3 a.m.
Oh, really?
You go to an AMC theater that's open, and Endgame will show at 3 a.m. or whatever. Like, it's not the whole Infinity Saga. It's literally, we don't have enough screens to fulfill the demand for this film, so we just will stay open.
Even some of the local theaters have been like, okay, I guess we're staying open later than usual, because there's like 2:50 a.m. showings in Sacramento too.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, if you have a demand for it, you know, why not?
All right, guys, we got to wrap up this lesson. We got to go stand in line right now.
I was actually taking him seriously for a second. I'm like, wait, do we? Oh, yeah.
I'm not joking.
But it's true to say, like, just, yeah, I kind of put you on the spot in terms of, like, anticipated standout character because, come to think of it, like, a lot of them, I'm pretty sure every single one of them within the time that is given will have their standout moment, their opportunity. I'm really anxious for, like, somebody like Drax to meet someone like, like Captain America, or to see somebody like Gamora meet somebody like Black Widow, or I'm anxious to see so many different things and so many people have their opportunity in the sun because this film, because of the time, you just hope and pray that it's going to give you that. There's just so many things to like hope and pray for with this particular film. I'm getting antsy now. So, yeah, we are obviously excited about this movie. It's been a long time coming, like we said, and it's not just the culmination of people who love comic book movies and are just fans. You're looking at people who have grown up with this particular franchise as well. Kids who we mentioned that were little kids in 2008 that are now 10 years later, 18 mm-hmm. or even older, you know, and may possibly even with their own kids, shown them all the movies and come to this point in time where they're like, oh, you know, I'm going to bring my son to go see the ending of this entire saga. This is like a lot. This is like an entire childhood in this franchise, in this bit of, you know, movies.
Totally.
And mm-hmm. it's just, it's like I said, it goes back to the emotionality of like what this whole saga is doing and what it's going to continue doing even after the fact, because there's still like no indication of where they're going after this. Like the sky's the limit, essentially. Like there's no indication after the fact other than we know, okay, well, there's a Spider-Man movie and we know what's gonna happen in that. So it's so interesting. But yeah, so that about wraps
I'm so excited. You guys, like, we've never seen anything like this before.
Never. Mm-hmm. And it'd be one thing if this was just like, say, the Fast and the Furious franchise where there'd been like 7 or 8 films in the entire running, but this is over the course of 22 films from 2008 to 2019. You're looking at over 11 years of films coming to a point where everybody has seen the story thus far, have become engaged with the comic, they've become engaged with the TV stories, they've become engaged with the digital web comics, they've become engaged with cosplay, with the Disney characters, with the shows on Disney XD, with the whatever. It's become part of culture now, and to see it come to this large just conclusion, and not even conclusion, but just to come to this large event where everything that you have been anticipating that had started with Infinity War is going to come to a head with Endgame. That says a lot.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Any last thoughts about Endgame before we wrap up, Spence?
I just want to see it already. That's where I am.
My heart rate is actually accelerated now. I'm so excited.
Let's go.
Well, we can go camp out at the theater right now. So, this was a great episode. And, of course, we are excited about the film. And we want to know what you think. So, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Let us know your thoughts. Are you excited about the movie? Are you planning to see it opening night? Or are you going to wait until the weekend? Or are you one of those special people who are going to go see it in one of those full marathons? I don't even know if that might actually be already underway.
I think that they've already started.
Yeah.
Or they're starting. By the time the episode drops, I think it will have started.
Because it's like, how many hours did you say it was spent? Like 72 hours or 40-something hours?
It's, gosh, it's 47 hours, 46 hours, but then they're putting in like sleep and bathroom breaks, so they've probably already started as of us recording.
Yeah, they should have started today.
So we want to hear from all of you. Let us know. And of course, you can check out all of our episodes at our website at filmlosophers.com, where you can check out all previous episodes, all the episodes we mentioned where we talked about any Marvel property, even the ones where we talk about other stuff. I mean, check us out. We got a lot of great stuff. So that's a lot of stuff. Said stuff a lot.
Stuff.
So like I said, this was fun. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.